Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Henrietta Zold, Hadassah and the Zionist Dream, by Francine Klagsbrunn, narrated by Dina Perlman. Introduction. I knew the woman for whom Louis Ginsburg, Henrietta Zold's great love, jilted her. Zold had met Ginsburg at the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York, where he was an eminent professor of Talmud, and she, the first woman enrolled full-time in that august institution, which trained men to become rabbis in the conservative movement. She had wanted to expand her Jewish knowledge, and she'd been accepted on condition that she not seek to enter the rabbinate. At 42, she was older than the students there, and 13 years Ginsburg's senior. Fluent in German, she felt flattered when the professor asked her to translate his class notes and some of his writings from German into English. During the next several years, she worked closely with him, laboring slavishly on his books, especially his magnum opus, Legends of the Jews, a compilation of legends and fables based on biblical origins. In addition to translations, she made editorial suggestions and corrections as the work expanded from one volume to seven. In the process, she fell hopelessly in love with him. Given the many hours they spent together and the letters they shared when they were apart, she assumed he felt as she did, despite their age difference. When he returned from a trip to Berlin at the end of the summer of 1908 and announced his engagement to marry a young woman he had met there, Zold's world fell apart. Her name was Adele Katzenstein, and she differed in every way imaginable from the plain-looking, shy, and erudite Henrietta Zold. Adele had high cheekbones, beautiful eyes, and a strong German-accented voice in which she tended to articulate whatever happened to be on her mind. Although sharp, that mind rarely turned to bookish matters. More often it focused on people and events around her. I met her decades after her marriage to Professor Ginsburg when I was a student at the Seminary College for Jewish Studies, now List College, a division of the Jewish Theological Seminary that supplements secular college educations. She was a presence on campus, known to all as Mama G, a beloved surrogate mother who felt no compunction about publicly addressing her dignified husband as Shotzi, her treasure. Devastated by Ginsburg's rejection, Zold poured out her heart to almost everyone she knew. The seminary community was nearly as shocked as she. Zold and Ginsburg had long been regarded as a couple. The story soon spread beyond that community, becoming a source of endless gossip. To this day, in rabbinic or Jewish academic circles, her name evokes pitying comments about her unrequited love, even among people who may know little else about her. After her initial reaction, Zold descended into a dark pit of depression that lasted for several years and at times bordered on self-destruction. She began to heal when she stopped blaming herself for what had happened and acknowledged Ginsburg's role in the sorry episode. As she recovered, she emerged a different person, far more independent and assertive, no longer the self-effacing woman behind the scenes she had been to Ginsburg and other men she worked with. Through profound self-examination and sheer will, she had transformed herself. Now, beliefs and values that had been in the background of Zold's thinking moved to the forefront. Zionism, which she had adopted years earlier, became a dominant force in her life, as did issues concerning women's roles and rights. Within a year after regaining her health, she founded Hadassah, the Women's Zionist Organization of America, which under her guidance would become the largest and most influential of all American Zionist groups. She viewed the organization's work as practical idealism, a combined ethical and pragmatic approach to fulfilling Jewish life in the historic land of Israel. A decade later, she would move to that land herself and use her skills to direct the health, education, and social services there. Late in life, she took on the task of heading the Youth Aliyah program, rescuing thousands of young people from the Nazi menace and resettling them in pre-state Israel. Through all her activities in Palestine, she sought ways to establish peace and equality with the Arab population there. How different would Henrietta Zold's life had been if Lewis Ginsburg had returned her love? We can never know. That is one of the what-ifs of history. But it is a fair guess that, like Adele's life, much of Henrietta's might have revolved around Ginsburg and the seminary. Adele Ginsburg didn't fully come into her own until after her husband died. She remained involved in the seminary and became active in supporting rights for women in synagogue rituals. Zold moved away from the seminary neighborhood sometime after her nervous collapse and recovery. While she maintained several of her old friendships, she developed new, closer ones. She never spoke of Ginsburg again or mentioned the episode with him in her vast correspondence. And she never married, although she regretted not having children. There have been numerous biographies, monographs, and articles about Henrietta Zold. I have read and relied on them all in my own study of her life and works. But with her myriad accomplishments, Zold appears in most of these writings as almost a paragon of perfection, so spiritual that, in the words of her longtime secretary, visitors entering her room had the sensation of entering a cathedral, a holy place. In reality, Zold was a complex flesh-and-blood human being who had to cope with controversy and criticism, a workaholic with an outsized sense of duty and a fierce temper, and an idealist who fought hard for what she believed in, even while she questioned her own abilities. It was that real-life woman I wanted to write about in this book, hoping to uncover the human person behind the idealized icon. In my search, I gave special weight to Zold's own words. She wrote an incalculable number of letters during her life. She insisted on personally responding to every letter she received, from critics and cranks as well as admirers. Most revealing were the letters she wrote to family and friends over the decades. In them, she spoke more openly about personalities and situations than she did in her public talks or published correspondence to the Hadassah community. Consequently, I read hundreds of her personal letters, the bulk of them located in the Hadassah archives on deposit at the American Jewish Historical Society in New York City, and others at the Central Zionist Archives in Jerusalem. Marvin Lowenthal collected many of her letters in his valuable book, Henrietta Zold, Life and Letters. But the book was prepared during her lifetime and, of necessity, omits material she did not wish to make public then. As a result, there are significant gaps in the letter's contents, with no indication of where an omission has been made. I therefore thought it best to read and quote from the originals as much as possible, using Lowenthal as a source when relevant. I also examined the personal journals Zold kept before, during, and after the Ginsburg years. Along with her thoughts on contemporary issues, Zold's writings display her quirky sense of humor, fine insights into people and places, and superb literary style. With her straight-laced appearance and soft speech, Zold might be said to reflect the Victorian era in which she was born. She was always called Miss Zold, even in the pioneer world of pre-state Israel, where everybody used first names. But behind the modest demeanor and proper manners lived a powerhouse of a woman, whose ideas and abilities shaped the world around her. Her life reveals that strength. 1. First Daughter. On the 19th anniversary of her father's death, Henrietta Zold, over 60 and living in Jerusalem, wrote to her sisters in the United States, "Out here, my recollections of him, his views, and his attitude towards all sorts of questions has become more vivid rather than less. As problem after problem comes up, I involuntarily ask myself how he would have met them. At all events, summoning back to my mind his way of dealing with social human perplexities helps me to serenity better than anything else. She did not exaggerate. Rabbi Benjamin Zold had been her ideal and her mentor from as far back as memory could take her, and though he had died years earlier, he remained the guiding force of her life. She was much like her mother, she would say, in her organizing skills, practicality, and concern for details, but it was her father who shaped her intellectual and spiritual development, influencing the values she held and the actions she took. From him, she had learned to speak several languages, understand classic texts, and turn her thoughts into written words. His stamp on her was such that, toward the end of her long life, her assistant could still say of her that she thinks and speaks of him constantly. Born in 1829 in the village of Nemiskert, Hungary, to a land-owning family unusual for Jews of the time, Benjamin Zold came to America at the age of 30 to serve as rabbi of one of the leading synagogues in Baltimore, Maryland, Oheb Shalom. According to family lore, he had been something of a prodigy in the old country, reading the Torah in Hebrew at the age of 4 and receiving rabbinic credentials at 16. Some said 14. Orphaned at a young age, he and his brother Solomon lived with a kindly uncle for a while. Benjamin moved on after his bar mitzvah to a prestigious yeshiva in Pressburg, today Bratislava, Slovakia, and from there to secular and Judaic studies in Vienna. Along with many of his schoolmates, he supported the revolution of 1848, and when it failed, he fled back to Pressburg. There, and in surrounding rural areas, he made a living tutoring Jewish children. In the tiny village of Seafair, today Seafair, Slovakia, at the home of the well-to-do widow Miriam Schar, her husband had opened a brewery, which she maintained, he met his wife-to-be, Sophie, the youngest girl of Miriam's 10 living children of the 12 she had born. But first, supported by Miriam, he accompanied two of her young sons to Breslau, where he supervised their studies while studying himself at the University of Breslau and the Jewish Theological Seminary there. This was an exciting time to be part of the Jewish intellectual world. The emancipation of the Jews in various European countries and the Jewish Enlightenment, which opened Jewish thought to secular Western influences, had brought profound changes to Jewish religious life. The Reform Movement, begun in Germany in the early 1800s, sought to modernize the religion by doing away with many of its rituals, alienating Orthodox Jewish authorities. The Breslau Seminary, headed by the scholar Zacharias Frankel, created a middle ground between the extremes of an orthodoxy that clung unchangingly to tradition and a reform that challenged almost all traditional observance. Its positive historical approach emphasized Judaism's ability to confront modernity while remaining loyal to fundamental Jewish laws and practices. Many of its teachings would translate into the centrist conservative movement in the United States, whose flagship was the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. To a great degree, that movement defined the religious behavior of Rabbi Benjamin Zold and later his daughter Henrietta. After accepting the rabbinic position in Baltimore, then the third largest city in the United States, Rabbi Zold married Sophie Schar, and the young couple set off for America in 1859, bringing with them one of Benjamin's cousins and one of Sophie's brothers. They settled in a small house on South Utah Street in the German section of town, a few blocks from the new synagogue building at Hanover Street. Like the rabbi, most of its congregants had emigrated from Central Europe, spoke German as their first language, and were generally known as German Jews. Slim and dark-eyed, with a black beard and pitch-black hair that curled around his ears, the young clergyman impressed his flock both with his appearance and his Jewish knowledge. The synagogue had joined the Central Reform Governing Body, the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, UAHC, but many of its worshippers leaned toward more traditional observance. They accepted the rabbi's moderate views with his emphasis on the Sabbath, dietary laws, and other rituals. At first, he preached solely in German, but over time, he interspersed the German with English sermons. Eventually, he also created a new prayer book, Avodat Yisrael, which had a Hebrew text and German translation. In his congregation and several others, it replaced the strictly reform Minhag America that had been in use. On December 21, 1860, a little over a year after the Zolds arrived in Baltimore, their first daughter was born amid the booming of the first guns found ushering in the Civil War. They named her ritually Chely after Benjamin's mother and called her Henrietta in honor of Henriette Herz, a beautiful 18th-century scholar who ran a brilliant salon in Berlin and about whom Henrietta Zold would later write an article in the Jewish Encyclopedia. Henrietta would have few memories of the war that raged during the first 4 years of her life. One that became iconic for her was of being held up high to watch the funeral cortege of the slain President Abraham Lincoln as it moved slowly through town past her home. She would never forget that moment, surrounded by sadness and silence. As a border state, Maryland had been torn between northern and southern sympathizers, and Rabbi Zold's community was as divided as the rest of the state. Although the rabbi personally opposed slavery, his public position in the battle between North and South mirrored his centrist religious positions. Unlike the firebrand Reform Rabbi David Einhorn, who had to flee town because of his passionate preaching against slavery, Benjamin Zold placed the preservation of the Union above all else, speaking regularly against the secession of southern states and emphasizing more than anything the need for peace and unity. Along with so many of his teachings, those lessons left a lasting impression on his eldest daughter. Rabbi Zold differed from many Baltimoreans in that he admired and supported Lincoln. On one occasion, he traveled to Washington to plead with the president for the life of a Jewish deserter sentenced to death. Lincoln sent him on with a letter of introduction to General George Meade, who turned down the appeal. The rabbi went to see the terrified soldier, recited psalms and prayers with him, and stayed by the condemned man's side until he and four other deserters were executed by firing squad. Henrietta Zold spoke with pride of her father's compassion in that incident, as she did of his membership after the war in the Baltimore Association for the Educational and Moral Improvement of the Colored People, an organization that helped freed black men attain an education. Sophie Zold gave birth to seven daughters after Henrietta, two of whom died in infancy. Henrietta helped care for her sisters and became especially attached to one of the younger ones, Johanna. When that child died of scarlet fever at the age of three, a distraught Henrietta became ill with a nervous disorder. St. Vitus's Dance, now known as Sydenham Chorea. The birth of the last girl, Adele, born when Henrietta was almost 16, comforted and helped heal her. By then, everyone in the family recognized Henrietta's place as the daughter closest to the rabbi, treated by him as he might have treated an eldest son, being groomed to follow in his footsteps. Intellectually gifted, serious, and devoted, she received an education from her father, equaled by few other women of her time. She even looked like him, with her intense dark eyes and somewhat sallow complexion, different from her mother's blue eyes and pink cheeks, traits that some of the other girls inherited. The elder Zold spoke German at home, and Henrietta became fluent in the language. By the age of eight, she was reading Goethe in the original with her father. Sitting at his side, she also mastered French and Hebrew, becoming knowledgeable in biblical and Talmudic law and lore. She read voraciously in English from Dickens's novels to the scholarly encyclopedia articles her father favored. As the years went by, she became his confidant and amanuensis, editing his work, translating his papers into English, and helping with his sermons. He came to depend on her, and she, shy and self-conscious, blossomed with his attention and teaching. She gained confidence in her abilities to form opinions and express ideas, to write and speak her mind. She also developed a massive sense of duty that hovered over her throughout life. She personally responded to the thousands of letters she received during the course of her lifetime. For example, almost invariably beginning her letters, whether to friends, family, or others, by apologizing for not having written sooner or more fully. "I don't forgive myself. My conscience on the subject of correspondence debts keeps me from enjoying life," she wrote to an acquaintance. And in spite of consistently assuming more responsibilities than she realistically had time for, she rarely refused a new request. "The world," she once wrote to her sister Adele, "is always jabbing some goad into me, as they do into the donkeys in the East. That keeps me trotting, just as the donkeys do." She would attribute much of her sense of duty to the example of her mother, who reared 5 children to adulthood, and cooked, baked, and ran the household with great efficiency. Yet the many hours she spent with her father, working hard to please him, had the most powerful impact. Indeed, as she grew older, she felt guilty, she said, for not having devoted herself exclusively to scholarship, as she believed he would have wanted her to. To some extent, Henrietta Zold's dedication to duty prevented her from going to college. Her formal schooling began in the basement of her father's synagogue, where she studied religious and secular subjects, and continued at a public grammar school until, at the age of 13, she entered the Western Female High School, the only Jew there. She graduated as class valedictorian in 1877, with the highest grades ever before achieved at that school. Johns Hopkins University had recently opened for men, but there were no schools of higher education in Baltimore that accepted women. Henrietta longed to attend Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York. Financial considerations were an issue, but the strongest barrier to her going there was the need for her at home to help her mother with the younger girls and aid her father in his work, which now included writing a commentary on the biblical book of Job. Within a few years, 3 of those younger sisters would get the college education denied her, and Henrietta would contribute to their tuition. But she herself had to divert her desire for a higher education into attending public lectures at Johns Hopkins and the Peabody Institute. Instead of continuing her formal schooling, she began to teach after high school, serving briefly on the staff of Western, and for the better part of the next 15 years, teaching French, German, Latin, algebra, and a variety of other subjects at the Mrs. Adams English and French School for Girls, an elite academy. Some afternoons, she also commuted to Oldfields, a boarding school for girls outside Baltimore. At the same time, she taught in Oheb Shalom's religious school on Saturday mornings and Sundays, and gave a Bible class for adults on Saturday afternoons. For all that, she would label herself a humbug of a teacher, because she had not had any official training. She enjoyed the teaching, and she enjoyed the writing she had begun to do around the same time. Before she was 18, she became a correspondent for the Jewish Messenger, a weekly paper published in New York, writing columns under the heading Our Baltimore Letter, and using the pseudonym Zulamit, too modest, as a proper Victorian lady, to sign her own name. Some of her early articles sound like echoes of her father's sermons. "Why need we adopt the Christmas tree, ridiculously baptized a Hanukkah bush? Have we not the menorah?" she scolded the Jewish community, as rabbis have done and would do for decades. Or, targeting Baltimore Jews for their indifference, she complained that synagogue services were woefully neglected on Friday Eve, when there is usually a ball at one of our principal clubhouses. When she found her own voice, it was straightforward, a little self-righteous at times, but also alive with verve and humor. Responding to anti-Semitic comments in a newspaper called The Standard, she labeled the author a Russian cur who might go mad and bite his editor. And when a critic called her a pan and pot scourer, a lowly woman, she proudly embraced domesticity, lobbing back that she would never neglect the peculiar privilege of women to attend to the physical comfort of their more awkward fellow creatures. "I have a pretty big capacity for righteous indignation," she later said of herself. After a while, her Jewish Messenger column, which had been at the back of the paper, was moved to the middle pages, printed under a bold-faced headline. By her early 20s, Henrietta Zold had branched out to write for various American Jewish newspapers and a few secular ones. In some articles, she used pen names. In others, she wrote anonymously. One of her anonymous pieces, published in the magazine Education in 1883, could well have been her cri de cœur, starved as she was for a college education. In it, she called for an endowed women's college in Baltimore whose best students would be admitted for special study at Johns Hopkins University. In an editorial supporting her ideas, the Baltimore American, a local newspaper, advocated for a women's college in Baltimore that would parallel the undergraduate training men received at Hopkins. Both articles caught the attention of the ardent feminist M. Carrie Thomas. From a well-to-do and prominent Baltimore family, Thomas had studied at Sage College, the women's school at Cornell University, but, prohibited by Johns Hopkins from attending graduate classes with men, she went abroad to attain a doctorate at the University of Zurich. Soon afterward, she became dean of the newly established Bryn Mawr College for Women in Pennsylvania, and then its second president. Together with several friends, she founded Bryn Mawr School in Baltimore, a rigorous institution to prepare young women for college. Most biographies of Henrietta Zold describe the two women becoming good friends as a result of Zold's article, a prestigious friendship for her. Their closeness is questionable, however. Extensive research into Thomas's writings and letters have shown her to be a virulent anti-Semite and racist who worked hard to keep Jews from joining Bryn Mawr's faculty. In fact, she lobbied against accepting Henrietta's younger sister Sadie as a student at Baltimore's Bryn Mawr School because she was Jewish. Sadie was accepted despite Thomas's objection, and so was the next youngest, Bertha, who would also attend Bryn Mawr College. It's unlikely that Henrietta Zold knew of Carrie Thomas's behind-the-scenes manipulations. The two women probably met in Baltimore social circles, becoming politely friendly through their mutual concern about women's education. But Henrietta's article held more importance for her than winning Carrie's friendship. It represented her first foray into publicly presenting women's interests as extending beyond home and family life, a position she would develop fully in years to come. Henrietta was about 13 years old when the family moved from their house on Utah Street to 702 West Lombard Street. By then, the two relatives who had come to America with her parents had gone their own ways. She would dwell in that home until she was 33, and it would live on in her memory for the rest of her life, an almost Proustian symbol of idyllic youth and family closeness. When she was settled in Palestine in her 70s, she found the scent of the fig trees in Nablus evocative of the Lombard Street garden, and Bertha's laughter and constant babble during a recent visit was so reminiscent of the years on Lombard Street that I can't believe in the flight of time from 27 to 72, she wrote Adele. The three-story red brick building on Lombard Street was designed in typical Victorian fashion, with a formal parlor on the first floor. But the most beloved room was the second-floor sitting room, which held Henrietta's desk. There the family gathered informally, and there, on Sunday evenings, they entertained their closest friends, many of them eligible males. The five Friedenwald boys, whose father, Dr. Aaron Friedenwald, was a noted ophthalmologist, lived nearby and exchanged frequent visits with the five Zold girls. The two sons of Rabbi Marcus Jastrow, a distinguished Philadelphia scholar and good friend of Rabbi Zold, came to town regularly to be with the family. Joseph, the younger, lived with the Zolds for a time while he attended Johns Hopkins. Other students from the university, who took Rabbi Zold's course in theology there, dropped in for dinner and discussion. Among them was Cyrus Adler, a brilliant scholar and expert in Semitics, whose life would cross Henrietta's in myriad ways, and who would come to hold major positions in the Jewish community, including president of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Miss Henrietta, as she...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?